MDog20, Matt Cross, BFF of Son of Havoc. You're listening to Solid Monster Sounds Off.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster Sounds Off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Thanks to Matt Cross, a.k.a. Son of Havoc, from Lucha Underground for that little soundbite there. And also, shout out to Joel Bear, fan of the podcast, for getting it for us. This is episode 454 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, August 7, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Only 2 weeks away from our SummerSlam meetup here in Brooklyn. You can RSVP right now. The invite is on our Facebook fan page. We're going to be at the KBH Beer Hall, only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center. Starting at 2 p.m. Sunday, August 21st. That is SummerSlam Sunday. Hope you can join us. We've got a lot of people that have already RSVP'd, a lot of other people thinking about coming. So if you think you might be able to make it, head on over there. You don't have to, but if you can RSVP, that would be very much appreciated. Audible is still offering listeners of this podcast a trial of its service for 30 days. You can get one free audiobook for doing so. Just go through the sign-up process using our URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. Sign up. You can get one free audiobook as part of your trial. And even if you cancel within those 30 days so you don't get billed, you get to keep your audiobook no matter what. Once you download it, it is yours. It belongs to you. Lots of wrestling books up there. Brock Lesnar, Hulk Hogan, Daniel Bryan, Chris Jericho, a whole bunch of them. So take advantage, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. We're also going to be doing PayPal Rumble 3 here this week on the podcast. Had a lot of people who made donations who wanted to participate in this thing. We're going to pick two winners, each of whom will get themselves a Sound Off shirt. I will have them sent out to them. We'll pick two winners at random. We're going to do that a little bit later on in the show, probably after the Cruiserweight Classic review. We'll do some PayPal Rumble action at that point. But if you do want to make a PayPal donation weekly, I just want to mention that here to the show. You can always do so on thesolidmonster.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On the right-hand side of the page, you will see a PayPal button. All you need to do is click that button, and you can make a donation of any value that you wish. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname if you want a shout-out on the show. But anytime you want to do that, that is the place to go. I also want to give a shout-out for our YouTube channel, and I want to say thank you, because this was the week that we finally broke past 20,000 subscribers. So thank you. And that's pretty cool to me, just because I don't put the full shows up on YouTube. That YouTube channel is devoted pretty much entirely to bonus audio content, so interviews, Sound of Gamer videos, post pay-per-view reviews, anything at all, book reviews, DVD reviews, anything that I decide I want to just do on a whim, that's really what that YouTube channel is. And so to have over 20,000 subscribers on the bonus content channel is pretty cool. And there's been a lot of cool stuff that's gone up recently. You know, I got the Battleground review up after that pay-per-view, but my interview with Diamond Dallas Page, which I did end up pushing out to the feed as well, but that's up on YouTube if you haven't already checked it out. And if you have, a lot of you guys have been tweeting love to DDP for the interview, at RealDDP. Keep doing that. I'm sure he likes to see that. Got a couple of other interviews on tap for the next couple of weeks. I am scheduled. I wasn't going to say anything, but he let the cat out of the bag, so what the hell. Bob Holly. Hardcore Holly himself. Now, here's somebody who spent 15 years in WWE. A lot of people can't say that. There are not very many people, like in-ring performers, you can say they spent that much time straight through multiple eras working for WWE. He's a very outspoken guy. Whatever you may think of him, he's honest to a fault. He's got a great book. We'll talk about that, too. But he's got a lot to say about this concussion lawsuit. He's got a lot to say about the wellness policy. This is going to be a good interview. And so I'm going to be speaking to him this week. Once that's up, if you are subscribed to our YouTube channel, which is where it's going to hit first, it may or may not hit the feed after that, subscribe to the channel, because once it goes up, you'll get a notification letting you know when it goes up. And also, Bob's book, that's another book you can get for free using our Audible link. So if you want to use that link, audibletrial.com/solidmonster, He doesn't narrate it himself, but the audiobook version of The Hardcore Truth is up on Audible if you want to take advantage of that. So I'll be talking to Bob, and I'm also scheduled to be speaking with the legendary Bill Apter, which is very exciting. I've met Bill before, and I'm a big, you know, fan of wrestling history and all those kinds of stories, and he also has a book out that I'm actually in the middle of reading right now. And we're going to talk to Bill Apter. That'll be not this week coming up, but the following week. Bill Apter is going to be joining us at our SummerSlam meetup in Brooklyn. He'll actually have copies of his book for sale if you want, you know, you want to get it signed, you want to take pictures. So Bill's going to be joining us in the flesh for the meetup, and I'll have him on the show as well. So some pretty cool stuff coming up. Check it out. I saw there were a bunch of people lobbying Matt Hardy, Broken Matt, on Twitter to come on the show. You know what? You never know when something like that might work. Hey, that's how we got Katrina on the show from Lucha Underground. Sometimes all it takes is some social media support, right? You never know what may happen. But I am I would be afraid to ask Matt because, you know, Vanguard 1 is probably hovering overhead right now. So I wouldn't ask him, but if you wanted to, then that's fine. Actually, he did a great interview with Chris Jericho on Talk is Jericho. I doubt I could top it. Totally in character, over an hour. Pretty funny stuff. So I would recommend everybody check that out. Woke up to some bad news this morning. Shelton Benjamin is not coming back to WWE after all. At least not for several more months. This is what he posted on Twitter early this morning. He said, "I am both disappointed and saddened to announce that due to a serious injury to my shoulder, I will not be returning to WWE at this time. For now, I have to put pro wrestling to the side as I prepare to undergo surgery to repair my torn rotator. This comes as a shock to me, as I am no stranger to performing in pain, yet I had no idea of the severity of my condition. Thank you, WWE, for helping me discover the situation and for giving me an opportunity to return. I will be back." So it sounds like, you know, he was all geared up and ready to go. They started airing vignettes for him on television, so they obviously thought he was coming in very, very soon. And I guess in the medicals or whatever, their staff must have discovered that, hey, you have a torn rotator cuff. You need to get that fixed. And rotator cuff surgery usually is a 4 to 6 month recovery, you know, barring any setbacks, barring any kind of complications. So, you know, here's hoping that door to return is still open for him at that point. I believe the shoulder injury that Hideo Itami had was a torn rotator cuff as well, and it took him 15 months to come back. He only first came back to TV this past week. We hadn't seen him since May of last year. And that was because he had complications, he needed a second surgery, he wasn't healing as quickly as they had expected. And, you know, and Shelton Benjamin is 41 years old, so, you know, age could always play a role in how long it takes somebody to recover. I mean, you really never know. You just never know with these things. So it really sucks. You know, it sucks for him. I can only imagine what his reaction was when he first found out the news. And it sucks for the fans because, honestly, and I'll speak for myself here, his was the comeback I was most looking forward to. You know, they're bringing back a lot of, yeah, kind of mid-card guys. We know Rhino is back, and I heard Scotty Too Hotty may be back soon, and they've, you know, Jinder Mahal came back on Raw. I mean, look, these guys are talented, but it's not like they're top-level guys or anything. They're guys that they can have on the show who can serve as warm bodies and can work with some of the newer guys. Shelton Benjamin, though, is somebody who I think had the potential to go, you know, a little bit higher than just being another guy on the roster. Who knows how high he could have gone? So I hope he gets another shot to come back, as it would really suck if his story ended like this. Big Show was in China this week and told a newspaper over there that he would be wrestling Shaquille O'Neal in a match at next year's WrestleMania in Orlando. Now, Big Show had challenged Shaq to a match, I guess, back at the ESPY Awards a few weeks ago on the red carpet. He issued a challenge, and Shaq accepted, and I thought it was just all, you know, for show. It was all kind of in a playful way. And for what it's worth, WWE put out a statement saying there is no such match signed for the show. Nothing is official. But, you know, that doesn't mean it can't happen. Now, I also saw Big Show talking about retirement. And I've been going for 21 years. I'm coming to the end of my run. Maybe this could be my retirement match. Let's be clear here about this. As a match, I think this could be Big Show Akebono levels of bad, okay? This could be a really bad match. But if they keep it short, you know, look, it would make for a nice little attraction. Shaq, of course, you know, he has roots in Orlando. He played there for the Orlando Magic for a number of years. It feels like they've been teasing this match for years. I remember when Shaq, he guest hosted Raw. He body checked Big Show out of the ring. This was during Big Show's Amish phase. I don't know. He looked Amish to me. So, and that was something like, what, 6 years ago? 7 years ago? It's like, Jesus. I don't mind them doing it so long as it's kept super short. Otherwise, I just think this could be really embarrassing. You've got two big guys, one of whom is not a wrestler, both of whom are getting up there in years. They're not young. It could be pretty embarrassing. I'd say maybe 3 to 4 minutes max, probably half of which is just a stare down for a crowd reaction. That's how I would book this. And Big Show does the honors, of course, because, you know, of course he would in that situation, just like he did for Floyd Mayweather. And if it is his last match, you know, a lot of these guys, they want to lose in their last match. Although, usually that's because they're putting over somebody new, right? They're putting over the next generation. Shaq is not, believe me, if Big Show beats Shaq, it's not like Shaq is going to go challenge for the championship or anything like that. So I guess it doesn't really matter. You probably should have Big Show win, in all honesty. I don't think he would, though. And then, you know, the two of them can hug it out, and Big Show can get a nice little send-off from the crowd. You know, until he's back on TV 2 weeks later, because let's be honest here, nobody ever really retires, except Shawn Michaels. The Big Show Floyd Mayweather match was, the match was nothing special, but, you know, it wasn't like offensive or anything like that. Really, it was the build-up to that match that made that thing so special. One of the best celebrity angles they ever did. I mean, forget celebrity angles. I think that was one of the best angles they ever did at that No Way Out show. The stuff with Big Show and Mayweather, when Mayweather punched him in the face and ran off with his entourage. You know, you got blood pouring out of Big Show's nose, Shane McMahon trying to restrain him and hold him back. I mean, that really was a hell of an angle. And I don't know if they could pull off something on that level between these two guys to get me interested, but you probably don't need to do much. I mean, one guy is probably, you know, what do you figure Big Show is? 6'11", legit? Right? The other guy, 7'1". Two big boys. You know, just having a face-to-face pull-apart with the whole locker room kind of pouring out, that's probably all you need. It's like what they did with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar. Those two guys started going at it, the whole locker room poured out. It was one of the best things on Raw all year. So you really don't have to do much here. Even better than that, you know, if you can get these two guys on ESPN, and doesn't Shaq work for, he works for TNT. Well, whatever, it doesn't matter. You can get the two of them on ESPN. WWE has the relationship with them. You can get them on the Tonight Show. You know, get them out there somewhere like that and get some publicity out of it. Get a face-to-face going or a pull-apart. I think the build-up to these things is almost always better than the match itself. Conor McGregor, who will be losing again to Nate Diaz at UFC 202 on August 20th, that's the same night as the NXT TakeOver show, he got into some hot water with wrestling fans this week. He was on a conference call for UFC 202 to talk about the fight. Somebody asked him about maybe working with WWE one day because, you know, UFC and WWE had just worked together. And he had some very unflattering comments to say. This is what he said. He said, "I haven't really thought about it. For the most part, those WWE guys are pussies. To be honest, they're messed up pussies, if you ask me. Fair play to Brock. He got in a fight, but at the end of the day, he's juiced up to the fucking eyeballs, so how can I respect that?" And then earlier this morning, I noticed that Conor McGregor posted a follow-up tweet to what he said. He says, "I didn't mean no disrespect to the WWE fans. What I meant to say was that I would slap the head off your entire roster, and twice on Sundays." And people are losing their shit, and I'm just sitting here laughing my ass off like, it's great. I think it's fantastic. He's working everybody. That's what he does. He says controversial shit. This is what Conor McGregor does. I think he has a ton of respect for what the WWE guys do. I even checked because I know he at one point he was following Triple H and Stephanie and Shane, and he still is. Wouldn't shock me if he even shot them a message beforehand or after the fact, because he probably didn't know he was going to be asked that question. But it wouldn't shock me if he shot one of them a message after just to say, hey, listen, you know, kind of like winking, like, don't take offense to what I said. And he said in the same, you know, on the same audio and answering that reporter's question, he said, there are some guys in WWE that he considers to be Dons, like Triple H is a Don, The Rock is a Don, but everybody else is a pussy. I don't think he honestly believes that. And even if he does, you know what? Again, he says controversial shit because he probably knows. He doesn't want to close that door. Who's to say that next year at some point, Conor McGregor doesn't come into WWE to work an angle? I don't think he'd be against it. But this is what the guy does. I don't take any personal offense to it. Like, I don't feel personally offended. How dare he say that? And going to go on a rant about Conor McGregor. This is who he is. He knows exactly what he's doing. It's very smart. Now he's already laid the groundwork for some, for an angle or a feud with somebody on WWE television if he ever has time and wants to do it. Can make them a lot of money, right? That's what Conor McGregor cares about, is money. Shoots his mouth off all the time. He's working everybody. I don't see what the big deal is. So, that's my 2 cents on Conor McGregor. I wouldn't put much stock into what he's saying here. I was going to talk about this Sports Illustrated list on their website. They put a list together of the top 101 pro wrestlers of all time, and they ranked them, and, you know, what is there to say? I've talked about this before. Whenever WWE.com puts together one of their top 50 or top 100 lists, it's so subjective, and the only reason they do it is to get people talking. They want to grind people's gears. They want to get the conversation going. They want to get hits. They want to get clicks. This is no different. I think they had Ric Flair at number 1 and Shawn Michaels at number 2 on their list. And look, hey, two of the greatest wrestlers of all time. It's hard to argue. You know, some people might say they're interchangeable. Some people might put Hulk Hogan at number 1. But look, everybody has a different criteria. What is the criteria here? Popularity? Money drawn? It's such a subjective thing. I mean, they had The Miz. The Miz is on the list of the greatest 101 of all time, but he is number 101. But, you know, they've got Frank Gotch and Gorgeous George, and they're kind of mixed in there. And some of the spots on that list just make me shake my head. But, again, it's such a subjective thing. Everybody has their own list. They only do it because they want to get people talking. Again, nothing like the Conor McGregor stuff. It's nothing to get upset about. If you want to check the list out, though, I think it's in the extra mustard section of the website or whatever, and you could check it out and make your own mind up. It's not the list I would put together. And, you know, it's a hard thing to do. I mean, really, you can't just on a whim make a list of the top 100 wrestlers in 5 minutes flat. I mean, it's a hard thing to do, and you really have to consider, you know, what is the criteria? What is going into the thought process with who's number 1 and who's number 10, and is there really a difference if you're number 18 and number 24? You know what I mean? When you have that many guys on one list, does it really matter? I think they had Brock Lesnar at 27 and Bret Hart at 16. Again, that's not the list that I would do, but it's hardly something to get all bent out of shape about. Monday Night Raw this past week, live from Atlanta, Georgia, the Raw Instapoll, 2,300 votes, 78% thumbs up, 22% thumbs down, so down from last week, but last week was probably one of the best episodes of Raw in years. And not every week can be like that. They can't hit a grand slam every week. This was still a good show, but I mean, the excitement level was definitely down a lot from the week before. They let Sasha and Charlotte open the show with a promo. And I have to say, you know, Charlotte, I have to give her credit here. Charlotte is pretty damn great on the microphone. Just how comfortable she looks when she's out there. I don't know that she gets enough credit for her promo, so I just wanted to mention that here. I put her ahead of Sasha, as far as that goes. I love Sasha's comeback after Charlotte. Charlotte basically said, you know, you got lucky in beating me. You're a one-night stand. And Sasha said, you know, that's ironic coming from the daughter of Ric Flair, because there's a pretty good chance that you yourself were the product of a one-night stand. That was a money line. I believe Sasha had, as all the cool kids say, no chill. Right? Is that the way they say it? Well, whatever. Anyway, Chris Jericho and Enzo Amore came out. This segment went on for another 15 minutes. They kept it entertaining the whole way, but that's still a long time. They were out there for like 25 minutes talking, and very, very seldomly will I say, okay, you know what? It's The Rock. It's You know, so-and-so's out there giving a retirement speech. Give them all the time they need. Give them 20, 25 minutes. That's okay. But I, generally speaking, as great as Jericho and Enzo were here, 20, 25 minutes for talking, it's just, it's too long. But Mick Foley comes out. It did serve a purpose. He made a mixed tag that saw Charlotte pin Sasha with Natural Selection. I didn't like Sasha getting pinned the week after she won the championship, but at least Dana Brooke ran out. She caused the distraction, so there was an excuse why she got beat. And it does set up the rematch. They are having a rematch at SummerSlam, so it's fine. They are continuing the jobber gimmick with Braun Strowman. This time, Byron Saxton interviewed Evan Anderhold in the ring before the match. He asked him, why would you take this match? And he said, well, I was promised $1,000 for taking the match, and I was promised $5,000 if I won. Well, hey, at least he's honest. I'd let Braun Strowman chokeslam me face first onto the floor for $1,000. I don't have any dental insurance, so that $1,000 would probably be wiped out pretty quick. But I would take it. And he did indeed win, Braun Strowman did, again with the reverse chokeslam. Michael Cole interviewed Finn Balor here in the ring on this show. His first promo on Monday Night Raw. He was immediately interrupted by Seth Rollins, who was trolled by the crowd in Atlanta with the Braves tomahawk chop after he said that the idea of Balor winning the Universal title was about as laughable as the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series. Instant Rollins babyface turn for shitting on the Braves. Thank you, Seth Rollins. So this ended by Rollins going after Balor. Balor laid him out with a Pele kick. Here's what I'll say about Finn Balor's promo work here. He wasn't bad. He wasn't bad. He showed good fire. But my mind has not changed. I'm going to stand by what I've been saying, which is that aligning him with... heel turn or not, okay? Probably would have to be a heel turn, but either way, aligning him with Anderson and Gallows so he can share the talking in these in-ring segments, I think that would really be the best thing for him. Him being out there cutting a promo, it's just not his strong suit. It's just not. And like I said, he didn't do much to change my mind here. He held his own. He held his own, but it's hard for me to sit here and imagine him carrying these segments week after week after week. Even someone like Seth Rollins, I'm kind of like, I'm past the point at, you know, of like caring when he's out there because I feel like he's cutting the same promos over and over again. But Rollins, you know, he's good at it. He's an articulate guy. I think he's very good at it. Finn Balor, he's got a lot of work to do there. I just think he's got a lot of work to do there if he's going to be expected to carry these kind of segments week after week. And surrounding himself with a couple of other people, I think, would be the right thing to do. Anderson and Gallows win the tag titles at SummerSlam. They help Finn Balor win the championship. They form the Balor Club. Rollins chases. I still say that's how you do it. So Rusev took on Mark Henry. Mark Henry was in the back. He is not retired. He is very much not retired. And he lobbied for a U.S. title match against Rusev, which they granted him. And he got beat like a jabron. So Rusev wins. He then cuts a promo about the Olympics and how the Olympics are rigged. I would say he was doing his best Trump impression, but at least there's actually some truth to what Rusev is saying here. And by the way, that injury, holy shit, I saw one of the French gymnasts snapped his leg in half on a vault jump. Like, this was Sid Vicious level gruesome. That's what it reminded me of. So all I can say is, drink your milk, folks. Drink your milk. Unless you're lactose intolerant like me, that would be a very bad idea. But otherwise, drink your milk, because a leg should not snap the way that this guy's leg snapped. Rusev brought up gold medals and such, and anytime you mention Olympic gold medals on really any wrestling show, but especially on a WWE show, how can you not think of Kurt Angle? I mean, come on. How can you not? So there's at least a small part of me sitting there like, I kind of know, okay, it's probably not Kurt, but then he starts talking about the Olympics and gold medals, and it was so perfect. And not only that, I didn't even realize this, but as a couple of you pointed out to me, this was the 20-year anniversary of Kurt Angle in this very city. They were in Atlanta, Georgia. 20 years in that very city that Kurt Angle won his Olympic gold medal. So how fucking perfect would it have been for that music to hit and for him to come out to defend his country's honor? I can't think of a better situation then right then and there for Kurt Angle to come out. So, of course, I've got Kurt Angle on the brain. Instead, out comes Roman Reigns. And no offense to Roman Reigns, because I actually think this is going to be a good thing for him. Not the guy I was looking for at that moment. But out he comes. Surprisingly, he came out to more cheers than boos. He got up in Rusev's face. He would not let him leave the ring, so Rusev attacked him. Reigns ended up laying him out with a Superman punch. So Roman has been demoted to U.S. title duty, it looks like, at SummerSlam. It looks like it'll be Reigns and Rusev for the championship. And I'm okay with this. You know, it may not end well for Rusev. I mean, I guess they could always do a DQ and keep Roman looking strong, but keep the belt on Rusev if they don't want to put a secondary belt on Roman Reigns. But I think it would be the best thing for him right now. And I don't even want to say that it would elevate the U.S. title. I mean, I guess it would in a way because Roman is higher in the pecking order than Rusev. But in saying that, it would almost be an insult to Rusev. I think Rusev has done fine as the U.S. champion. I think it's almost a slight against him to say, well, it would elevate the title. Like, Rusev's been doing a pretty good job. But Roman Reigns is a bigger star. So, again, I guess in a way, by putting the championship on him, if they did that, it would sort of elevate the title the way it did when John Cena beat Rusev. So, I'm okay with this. I think Reigns winning the U.S. title would give the title a little bit of a jolt. It would help keep Reigns out of the world title picture for a while, which, based on the reaction he got here, I think that could be the best thing that could ever happen to him. So I'm on board with this idea. It's almost like they're doing the Roman Reigns push in reverse. Like, had they done it this way first, where he went through the U.S. champion or the Intercontinental champion or whatever, you know, they might not be in the situation they're in with this guy right now, getting booed out of the building every single week. Titus O'Neil pinned Darren Young with a fistful of trunks. He was playing the heel in their match, so it looks like they're going to be feuding now. Titus got up in Bob Backlund's face backstage after the match. He threatened him. That was Darren Young's cue to attack, so they're doing a primetime players feud, it looks like. Nia Jax beat Ariel Monroe in a squash with a torture rack into a power slam. So she ditched the leg drop, at least for one night. And if you heard the podcast last week, you can imagine how happy I was to see that. New Day beat Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson when Big E rolled up. Well, who else? Of course, Karl Anderson, since he always is the one who eats the pin in these matches. After the match, Anderson and Gallows, they got their heat back. They laid waste to the New Day. At the end of the day, whoever wins the match, if you are the guys that are left standing in the end, then you came out of it pretty good. They left the New Day guys laying. They destroyed Big E's Little E's by yanking him dick first into the post. And WWE.com has since confirmed that Big E has suffered a contusion to what they called the affected area. So let me translate that. He suffered a contusion to his cock and balls. There will be no gyrations from Big E for a while. Jinder Mahal is back. The four words you never knew you wanted to hear, but now you did. Heath Slater brought him back. Mick Foley immediately made a match between them and said, hey, the winner of this match, you get a Raw contract. So Jinder Mahal booted him in the face and pinned him to win that contract. Seth Rollins beat Sami Zayn. Real good match. Beat him with the pedigree. And then we had the return of Paul Heyman, who has in fact signed a new contract with the company. He introduced Brock Lesnar, looking much, much smaller than usual. Who put Brock Lesnar in the dryer? That was the first thing I thought. And yes, I used the same joke that was used on me by a bar bouncer once when I dressed up as Hulk Hogan for Halloween. And almost 10 years later, I can tell you that not much has changed. Randy Orton came out from underneath the ring. He laid out Brock with an RKO out of nowhere before disappearing into the crowd. Stephanie and Mick Foley came out. The whole Raw locker room poured out. They wanted to make sure that Orton didn't come back. Orton took his shirt off. He was doing his Orton douche pose in the crowd. And our very own Trey Marquis from our Facebook group, he was right there. He was in the shot right next to Randy Orton, getting his 15 seconds of fame. So shout out to Trey. Points off, though, for not wearing a sound-off shirt. I don't like that they're already mixing guys from each brand, but, you know, once they drafted these two to different shows, it was inevitable that this would happen. I mean, how do you build up a match if one guy's on one show, the other guy's on the other, and you don't have them together at any point? It's stupid. So the moment they drafted Orton to SmackDown and Brock to Raw, they had no choice but to do it this way. You know, that's just how it's going to be. And what they did here, I thought it was well done. I just wish, you know, this is the sort of thing that they should be holding off on, I think, until Royal Rumble time, right? Or sometime closer to WrestleMania, not 2 weeks after the draft. At least try to give the illusion that these are going to be two separate brands. And of course, you know, tit for tat, they did it again on SmackDown. And now Mick Foley has invited the SmackDown general manager, Daniel Bryan, to come to Raw this Monday night. So he'll be there tomorrow. Maybe they'll do a trade. You know, maybe Foley will request that Orton come to Raw, and in exchange he can send Sami Zayn to SmackDown. I don't know. We'll see what they do. Speaking of SmackDown, I did watch SmackDown Live on Tuesday. I like SmackDown more than Raw this week. This was the opposite of last week. But my biggest complaint, it was not JBL. I actually thought he was more tolerable than he was the week before. He was dialed down a lot. So clearly I was not the only one who felt like he was a telephone cord around the neck of last week's show. My biggest complaint was the crowd of corpses that they had there in Nashville. You know, sometimes I joke about when they go to Corpus Christi in Texas. We call it Corpses Christi. They had a crowd of corpses in Nashville, Tennessee. What the hell was that about? I have never seen, I can't say never, but it's been a long time since I have seen a crowd. And I'm not talking for one match or one segment. Almost every single thing on that show, they just didn't react. They just stood there. They had people. I saw bodies. They weren't very active. They weren't very lively. I'm just sitting there going, what the hell is wrong with these people? It's like they're in a catatonic state. You know, but I guess I shouldn't complain, because at least the one thing we don't have to put up with anymore on these SmackDown shows is all that fake crowd sweetening every week. But I mean, you would think these people were being held at gunpoint for 2 hours and forced to watch this show. So Daniel Bryan was on the, I want to make sure I get the name right here. He was on the Bear Hug It Out, that's actually a pretty clever name, the Bear Hug It Out podcast last week. And he let it leak that WWE is going to be creating a women's title for the SmackDown brand. They're also likely going to be creating their own set of tag team belts, although he didn't say that specifically. And at this point, they may as well go ahead and do it. I mean, it doesn't make sense to create two top titles. I was going to say world titles, but I guess one is the fucking universal title. But it makes no sense to create two separate top belts, but then have traveling champions on the undercard, right? If anything, you would do the opposite. You would have an Intercontinental champion on one show, a U.S. champion on another. You can have tag champs on both shows and a women's champ on both shows. And you know what? I take that back. You could do the traveling women's champion. You could have a traveling world champ and a traveling women's champ. That at least would make more sense. You're not going to have two world champs and everything else is going to be, you know, mixing and matching. So the way they've done it at this point, they may as well. SmackDown needs their own belts. I don't like having all these belts, but they're doing it, and so you may as well do it because these people need something to fight for. So go ahead and create them. And you know, look, you can tell by my voice, I'm not very happy about this. It took years to get rid of having all those belts, the multiple titles. I do think it waters things down. If they did it the right way, though, there is a way to make it work, and that is you really do keep the two brands separate, and you build to a supercard. And it doesn't even have to be at WrestleMania. I immediately think WrestleMania, just because WrestleMania is the biggest show of the year. That's what they should have done with the Invasion in 2001. You keep, you know, you bring in all the WCW big names, you build to a big supercard at WrestleMania 18 in the Sky Dome, and you have one of the biggest pay-per-views of all time. Because for wrestling fans, that was like a wrestling fan's wet dream back during the Monday Night Wars. What would it be like if Goldberg wrestled Steve Austin? And that's what people wanted to see. So they had the power to build to that, and they fucked it all up. Here, you could kind of try to recreate that dynamic. It's not going to be quite the same thing, but you could build to a big supercard. It could be a network special. It could be at WrestleMania. You could do matches like AJ Styles against Finn Balor and stuff like that. And maybe you do a deal where, you know, it's the tag team champions on one show against the tag team champions on the other show. And you can have the Intercontinental champion against the U.S. champion. And you could do stuff like that. If they play their cards right, it could still be really meaningful. But are they going to do that? Probably not. Probably not. Daniel Bryan made a triple threat match for this show, with the winner facing The Miz for the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam. And the participants were Kalisto, Baron Corbin, and I'm using Bryan's own words here. This is what he said. Apollo Creed. I would have preferred to see Apollo Creed, to be honest with you. I think he'd be a hell of a challenger for the Intercontinental title. He's probably got more charisma than most of the guys on the roster. It's a minor thing. One thing SmackDown does that Raw does not do that I really like is when somebody comes down to the ring, they put their stats up in a box on the right side of the screen. Again, small thing, but I like it. Anything to differentiate the two shows. Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler had a face-to-face in the ring to hype up their WWE Championship match at SummerSlam. This was very interesting. Dean Ambrose came off like a total dick, I thought, here in this segment, which suits him very well. I actually like that side of Dean Ambrose. He shot down Dolph Ziggler at every turn. He just mocked the guy. He said he was all flash. You're too worried about what everybody else thinks of you. Ziggler said Ambrose started out on top in WWE. He didn't have to fight for it the way that he has. You know, I started out as a male cheerleader, and I had to scratch and claw my way to the top. And a quick correction here. He started as Chavo's golf caddy. And I'm not sure which is worse, but at least the male cheerleader... You know, the male cheerleader gimmick worked for a good heel heat. The Spirit Squad actually got over, so I can't really knock it. Probably ended a lot quicker than it should have. The caddy gimmick, though, was just death. So that's how he actually started. I don't necessarily blame him for not wanting to remind people of that. So Ambrose said that at SummerSlam, Ziggler is going to come to the realization that you're just not as good as you think you are. And then he walked off, and that might have been the most hurtful thing that anybody, you know, in storyline could say to Dolph Ziggler. Is that for all the talk about how great I am and the great matches I have and the people on social media getting behind me, you're going to find out that you are, in fact, not as good as you think you are. You are overhyped. So I thought that was a good closing line for him to walk off on. The lights went out at that point. When they came back on, Bray Wyatt was in the ring. He laid out Ziggler with a Sister Abigail. He challenged Ziggler to a match where if Wyatt won, he would get Dolph's title shot at SummerSlam. So now, and I thought this was great, because now you're thinking, oh, this is it. We were waiting, right? We were waiting for the other shoe to drop. It just didn't feel right that they would be putting Dolph Ziggler, after the way they've beaten this guy down over the years, they're going to put him in a championship match at SummerSlam. So certainly, Bray Wyatt is going to beat him. He's going to take his title shot away from him, and it's going to be Bray Wyatt against Dolph, Bray Wyatt against Dean Ambrose. That's what they wanted you to think. And even if you're one of these people who thinks, like, oh, I knew that Dolph was going to win, you know that in the back of your mind, there was at least that seed of doubt that, holy shit, they might actually take this away from him. You know, you might not admit it, but you know that seed of doubt was there. And that's why this was set up the way that it was, and I thought it was brilliant. And, you know, I thought it was very effective. And Ziggler went to Shane backstage and Daniel Bryan, and they were, you know, they weren't going to do it. You know, you earned your title shot, it's yours, you don't have to do this. And Ziggler was like, nope, I'm not backing down, I want the match, I want my title shot on the line. Which, you know, in a way makes him come off as a bit of a dumb shit. Because you earned this title shot, why would you give it up? But they're trying to, you know, they want him to earn it. They want Dolph to earn it. They want him to earn it in the eyes of the fans. And look, this was all done to help get him over as a legitimate contender. I said this last week. God bless Dolph Ziggler. I'm happy for the guy. But they've got some work to do. If they're going to convince people, they're going to convince me to take this guy seriously in a spot like this. SummerSlam is one of the biggest shows of the year. Some might say the second biggest. It's the WrestleMania of the summer. 4 hours long. He's in the championship match. And it's hard to take that seriously when you look at what they've done with this guy. And as I pointed out, it was only 6 months ago or 7 months ago that he was jobbing in 2 minutes on Raw 2 heats later. A guy who is a punchline. A guy who went undrafted. So they're doing everything they can now in the weeks left that they have to try to make this guy come off as the real deal. And after all the damage they've done to him, it ain't going to be easy, because there's a lot of people out there who just can't take Dolph Ziggler seriously as a championship contender. They can't accept it. It's a joke to them. And I don't think it's a matter of hating Dolph Ziggler. I think it's a matter of, this is the way the guy has been booked, right? Don't blame the fans. But I thought they took a big step here with what they were trying to do in the main event. We'll get to that in a second. Apollo Creed won the triple threat match, rolling up Kalisto for the flash pin. It may be a new era, but they sure still do love their schoolboy roll-ups. Some things never change. Corbin beat up Kalisto after the match, which led to Cruz making the save, which led to Miz, who was at ringside doing commentary, laying him out with the skull-crushing finale, which then led to Baron Corbin laying the Miz out with the End of Days. And Baron Corbin, the guy who lost the match, now granted he wasn't pinned, but he still lost, and he is not challenging for the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam, but yet he was the one, him in his stomach, who looks like Jar Jar Binks, he was the last man standing. Becky Lynch and Eva Marie never got started. Eva pulled a Kevin Nash and hurt her leg, climbing down from the top rope. This was the best match of her career. She was clearly feigning an injury as she was helped to the back. If her new gimmick is that she finds ways, like different ways each week to never actually wrestle, that's the greatest idea ever. And I think the person who came up with it deserves a raise. American Alpha debuted. They beat the Vaudevillains. Not much to it, but these guys are much more than ready for the main roster. They need to make a new set of tag belts, I think, just for them. John Cena and AJ Styles had an in-ring segment together. I thought this was good. This was the second strong in-ring promo segment on the show. Styles got a nice little dig in at you-know-who when he said, Nashville has the weakest minds. Trust me, I know. When he was insulting the crowd and saying that they were idiots for liking John Cena. And their parents were idiots as well, he said, for giving their kids participation trophies. Ain't that the truth? I want to know where that awful trend started. You shouldn't get a trophy, he said, for participating. You should get them for winning, which is absolutely true. And he said that he deserves a trophy for beating up John Cena. And then John Cena went into his spiel. Now, as much as I thought this was a strong segment, I thought Cena, his delivery was great. I thought AJ was great. This was the same shit we always hear from John Cena. I love this place. I'll never leave the WWE. I do this on my day off. I do that on my day off. I love this. I love this. We get it. Okay? We get it. You love WWE. I want these two guys to fight, and the best man wins. Instead, and I apologize for forgetting the person's name who brought this to my attention. I think he may have tweeted it to me. Whoever it is, you know who you are. But he made a very good point. Cena talks about going on the Tonight Show, right? He talks about hosting the Today Show and hosting the ESPY Awards and all of these things that he loves to do that have absolutely nothing to do with wrestling. You ever notice that in these promos they have Cena talk about everything but the actual wrestling part? He'll talk about how great it is to have the fans cheering him. Oh, they could cheer me, they could boo me, they come here to have fun, and all the different TV shows that he's on and the Make-A-Wish stuff. But the actual wrestling, right? The winning, the losing, it all seems secondary. Now, I know in reality it is, obviously. The actual work and the actual wrestling is not as important as all the other shit they have him do. I get that. I mean, if it was all about the wrestling part, then Cena would have been a footnote in the history of this company. But in storyline, all this other shit is secondary to me as a viewer. Instead, his biggest criticism of AJ Styles in this segment is that AJ, and I quote, is only here to be a good wrestler. And if it doesn't work out, you'll just go and work somewhere else. Now, when I'm watching this show, I don't care about John Cena hosting the ESPY Awards. I don't care about John Cena being on Jimmy Fallon. I mean, that's cool and all, but I don't care. You know, it's like on Raw every week when the Authority was in power and you had guys like Randy Orton and Seth Rollins competing to find out who is the face of WWE. I don't give a fuck. I don't care. Who cares who the face of the company is? Why does it matter? Why does it matter to me? right? It irritates the shit out of me when he does this, because all he's doing, he's regurgitating the same promo over and over again that we've heard him give 1,000 times before, but he delivers it really, really well. So at the end of the day, it's a great promo, right? It's a great segment, because he's really good with his delivery. He's one of the best in the entire company. But I love this idea that we're supposed to think less of AJ Styles. He's the heel in all this, because all he cares about is being a good wrestler. I love how that's such a bad thing, you know? So Styles challenged him to a match at SummerSlam, and he said that after I beat you, John Cena, you're going to be forced to admit that AJ Styles is better than you. And I thought he had a great line here. He said, if you don't say it, you're a liar. And if you do, you're a loser. That's what I want. That's what I want to see. Two guys fight to see who the better man is. AJ said, no club, just you and me one-on-one. That's how it should be. You could take your ESPY award and stick it up your ass. I don't care about any of that. On Raw, Randy Orton appeared. He laid out Brock Lesnar with an RKO. So it only made sense that Brock would retaliate, and retaliate he did. He interfered in Orton's match with Fandango, and he laid him out with an F5, and security then escorted Brock out of the building. I don't know how many of you noticed that two of the security people were Dalton Castle's boys from Ring of Honor, the Tate twins. Backstage, Daniel Bryan told Heath Slater he could have a match next week to earn a SmackDown contract, and when he asked who it would be against, Rhino appeared, and he gored him. Speaking of which, congrats to Rhino. He won the Republican primary for state representative in Dearborn, Michigan, with 38% of the vote to the next person's 36%. He won. It was a slim margin. He won by less than 100 votes. So now he moves on to the election in November. He will face off against whoever the Democrat is. He has lived in the same house in Dearborn for the last 15 years. So he's obviously very much involved in the community there, so that's pretty cool. I would think that that would spell the end of his SmackDown run if he actually won the election. I can't see him getting Tuesdays off every week to fly wherever SmackDown is, but yeah, maybe weekends or something. I know people pitched a fit when Jesse Ventura worked SummerSlam while he was the governor of Minnesota, and that was on his day off. As he said, that was a Sunday, right? That's my day off. What's the big deal? But then again, being governor is very different from being a state representative. They're not exactly one and the same, so I guess we'll see how that's going to work. But congrats! That's very cool for him to have pulled that off. Dolph Ziggler and Bray Wyatt. Wyatt sprained his ankle early in the match. He was able to continue. I'm starting to think this guy is cursed with all the injuries. You know, I feel like one more, and I think it's safe to start using the injury-prone label on this guy. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But to go back to the point I was making earlier about them needing to do things to make people take Ziggler seriously, pinning Bray Wyatt clean is a good start. Which is not to say that Bray is immune to losing. It's not like Bray Wyatt never loses, right? He lost to John Cena. He lost to The Undertaker. He lost to Roman Reigns. How many times did the Wyatt family come out on the losing end of their feud? At least they beat the New Day. But yet, despite all of that, it feels like it's a rare thing to see Bray Wyatt lose on TV, even to wrestle on TV. It doesn't seem like it happens very often, let alone losing to somebody like Dolph. It's like when Zack Ryder pinned Sheamus on SmackDown with a fucking elbow drop off the top rope, or Elbro, or whatever the hell he calls it. Right? It felt weird, because it's just something that you don't ever see. And of course, Sheamus came right back on Raw the following Monday, kicked him in the face in 2 minutes and pinned him. So all was right with the world. But Dolph beat him clean with a super kick. Eric Rowan then attacked Dolph from behind. Ambrose, who was on commentary, he tried to make the save. He got dumped out of the ring. And then Bray Wyatt laid out Ziggler with the Sister Abigail. So even though he won the match, Ziggler is left laying as the show closes. So they now have a SmackDown post-show on the network called Talking Smack, which is actually a very clever name. I like that. Shout out to Horny Vagina Milk on Twitter. Somehow he managed to slip through and get his name on the Twitter scroll on the bottom of the screen during the live show. So there's a shout out I never thought I would hear myself give. So Raw versus SmackDown Week 2 is in the books. SmackDown bounces back, I think it's safe to say, gets the win, I thought, over Raw this past week. But, you know, two good shows. And it doesn't matter who wins. I mean, I do this as just a fun thing. I don't even know if I'm going to do that every week. You know, the whole Raw versus SmackDown thing, it's just for fun. you just want to have good shows every week. And it's been 2 weeks. Raw was incredible the week before. This week it was good. SmackDown I was not impressed with at all that first week. It was okay. And I thought this week it was actually the much stronger show. But I think so far with the brand extension, so far so good.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
After 15 months on the shelf, Hideo Itami made his long-awaited return on this week's show. He's now sporting a very nasty scar on his left shoulder, where he had not one but two surgeries. This guy's been through the ringer. It was good to finally see him back and healthy again. He beat Sean Mulata with the flying knee, which is, again, now that Daniel Bryan is retired, it is his once again. He got his move back. No tease for the GTS, but, you know, it's only his first match back. Give it time. Mulata was on the losing end of the match with Kota Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Classic. He was the guy who almost died trying to dive out of the ring. They showed, which seems to be a trend lately in WWE, they showed Zack Sabre Jr., Drew Gulak, and Tony Nese standing in the crowd watching this match. Tom Phillips actually brought up the angle from last year where Itami was attacked in the parking lot and suggested Kevin Owens was considered the prime suspect at the time, but Corey Graves sort of brushed it off, and it was never mentioned again. So it looks like this may end up alongside the White Hummer angle in WCW as one of those unresolved storylines. Carmen Electra was supposedly going to be the one revealed as the driver of that Hummer in storyline, but never happened. Would have made about as much sense as everything else that was going on at WCW at the time. We got a backstage promo with the Revival, who were interrupted by TM61. They challenged them to a title match. When Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa walked in, they reminded the Revival that they were in line for the next title shot. And suddenly the Revival, who had just turned down TM61, said, "You know what? It's too bad because we already have a match with these guys tonight." So they agreed to work the match with TM61. And then they walked off, so that set up the main event. Mojo Rawley was about to win a quick single squash when Samoa Joe ran down, broke up the pin, beat up both guys. Joe yelled for William Regal, said that if he wasn't going to be consulted about who he wrestles in title matches, he would just wreak havoc on Regal's show. Mojo actually came back and knocked Joe down from behind. That was like signing his own death warrant. And Joe attacked him from behind on the ramp. He choked him out with the clutch. "This is what's going to happen to you, Nakamura." That's what he screamed. Joe is a scary man when he gets angry, so, one day, Brock Lesnar is too. I think the build-up to that match would be fun. Bayley was out next to provide color commentary for Asuka's match with Aliyah. Asuka is definitely playing heel in this feud. She grabbed a chair from ringside. She plopped it down at the foot of the aisleway. She got back into the ring. She climbed up to the top rope. She pointed at Bayley over by the announcer's desk. She then pointed down to the chair and basically ordered her to sit your ass down here, not up there. And, it's funny. On Raw, Chris Jericho was mocking Sasha Banks, calling herself the boss. He wanted to know, what does that even mean? Like, what are you the boss of? This is what makes you a boss. This right here. Sasha's not the boss. Asuka is the boss. So Bayley did come down. She threw the chair, though, aside, and she decided to stand instead. Asuka just played with this poor girl, beat the crap out of her, won with the Asuka lock. She wouldn't let go. Bayley got into the ring to make the save, but as soon as she got inside, Asuka released the hold. So next week, they're going to have a contract signing. We got a flashback interview. I don't know why this first aired now, but it was an interview with Oney Lorcan. I can't say that name now and not think of the Orkin Man. That could be his new gimmick. Maybe he's the Exterminator. So Oney Lorcan is here doing this interview. This is back when he beat Ty Dillinger, which was weeks ago. So maybe this aired on YouTube and they were just showing it here. He talked about needing to go back to his roots for some reason. I hope this means that he's dropping the crappy name and going back to being Biff Busick. I mean, I look at people like Samoa Joe and Austin Aries and Bobby Roode and Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, and I say, why can't he be Biff Busick? How come those guys can keep their names and he can't? Why does he have to change? Poor Hideo Itami. Yeah, he was about a year too early. Had he come in later on, he probably could have come in as Kenta. It's like, just let the guy be Biff Busick. We got another one of those vignettes with the person far off in the distance, sort of hidden by the grass or the weeds or whatever the hell it is. And then they flash the message, Ember Moon, coming August 20th, 2016, which means she is debuting at the TakeOver show in Brooklyn. She is the former Athena from the Shimmer promotion. Her new name is, I think her new name here is very Lucha Underground-esque, this whole Ember Moon thing. Actually, it reminds me of Cobra Moon. That's probably why I thought of Lucha Underground. I hope Ember Moon is better than what I've seen so far from Cobra Moon. That's all I can say about that. I think she will be, though. I saw a video of her getting a standing ovation the other night after her match with Asuka at the NXT show in Pensacola. And when you're getting a standing ovation at a house show, and you haven't even debuted on TV yet, that's a pretty good sign. We finally got the NXT television debut of Bobby Roode. His new theme song is Glorious, as in that's literally what it's called, Glorious. Actually, Glorious Domination. That is the full name. It very much has a Queen vibe to it. If you like Queen, I think you probably like this song a lot. If you hate Queen, then something's wrong with you. I don't know why anybody would hate Queen. Here's the thing about the promo. I thought it droned on a little too long. But by the end, he had turned the entire crowd against him. He was talking about how I'm wearing a suit and everybody here is dressed like a slob, which they were. For the record, you know, all these Florida people, they're dressed up like it's hot down there or something. Bobby Roode is just such a better heel than he is as a babyface. So it was absolutely the right move to make. Should he have been a babyface for a while and then had a big heel turn? You know what? Who cares? He's a heel. That's all that matters. And I do think at some point he'll be tagging with Austin Aries, maybe not as a permanent team, but I want to see the two of them at least tag up a few times because I really do miss that team. So the whole package, you know, the new theme song and everything, Bobby Roode he's here finally. He is established as a heel on the roster. And I have found myself not only singing his song in my head, but Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, they've started this thing called Glorious Bomb. It's like a new hashtag on Twitter where they've been traveling with Bobby Roode, and on their phone they'll play his theme song at random times, like when he's working out, when he's trying to sleep on the bus. They were in his freaking hotel room. Bobby Roode is naked in bed trying to sleep. All of a sudden, the music plays. He pops up. He kind of gives a little nod of the head. Apparently, this is becoming a thing now. This is like a new meme to Glorious Bomb someone, which is great, because the first time we've heard this guy's theme music, and already he's a meme. The Revival beat TM61 in a good match. Scott Dawson pinned, I think it was Shane Thorne, with a DDT. Gargano and Ciampa came out, reminded them about their title shot. This was the Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa week. Between what they did here on this show, they ended up getting into a brawl with The Revival, and it looks like they're going to get the title shot at TakeOver on the 20th. All this Glorious Bomb stuff that's been taken off and trending on Twitter. They had also just an outstanding match in the main event on this week's Cruiserweight Classic, which I'm going to talk about here in a second. But I just real quick want to run down the TakeOver show that's coming up on August 20th. So far, this is how it looks, and not everything here is confirmed, but the debut of Ember Moon will be on that show. Looks like Austin Aries, probably against No Way Jose, who I was very impressed by in that promo he cut last week. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa against The Revival for the tag team titles. Apparently they have been tearing it up on the house shows night after night, 4 5-star matches. I don't mean 4 5-star matches. I mean having 4-star or 5-star matches, depending on who you hear from. These guys, I think that's going to steal the show. I really do. I mean, I'm looking forward to Joe and Nakamura. That's the main event for the NXT title. Bayley and Asuka should be good. They'll wrestle for the women's title. But I think that tag title match is going to be the sleeper match on that show. It could be the sleeper match the whole weekend. And they could always add one more match, but that's the way the card's looking right now. That's a pretty damn solid card right there. You know, the three title matches alone, I think, make this a must-see show. So let's talk about the Cruiserweight Classic. This was episode 4. I have to say, Daniel Bryan on commentary, his enthusiasm is just infectious. You know, he just comes off as the most excited, geeked-out fan watching these matches. There's absolutely nothing manufactured. There's nothing scripted. There's nothing forced about him on this show. He's just watching along with the rest of us, and he's reacting to it. and doing so in the most animated way possible. We had Rich Swann representing the US of A against Jason Lee representing Hong Kong, China. Total showcase for Rich Swann. He is easily one of the most popular guys in the entire tournament. Jason Lee, I felt, looked good, didn't get to show much. Swann won with a very impressive standing 450 splash. So he brings, you know, Jason Lee's kind of down in the corner. You think, okay, Swan's going up top. But he doesn't. He just stands there, and he starts jumping up and down to, like, build momentum. And then he just busts out a 450 from a standing position. Because I guess climbing to the top rope is overrated. So that was pretty impressive. Noam Dar, born in Israel but repping Scotland here in this tournament, against Gurv Sira, the other half of the Bollywood boys. This was the first time that I've been able to watch Noam Dar wrestle. I've heard a lot about him. I didn't like this match at all. I don't know if it was just the chemistry thing between the two of them, but I thought this was boring and just almost a chore to sit through. So Dar worked over Sierra's leg in the early part of the match. He ended up winning by submission with a knee bar. This whole thing just never clicked for me. So I'm anxious to see Dar in the next round. If it was a chemistry issue, then I would expect him to have a much better match. But this did not impress me at all. But then things picked up. We had the extraordinary gentleman. Speaking of my first time seeing these guys, Jack Gallagher representing the UK against Fabian Aichner representing Italy. This was the opposite of the Noam Dar match. It was my first time seeing Jack Gallagher in a wrestling match. I actually saw a YouTube video of him winning an MMA fight, believe it or not. I don't remember when it was from, but he won by submission, if you must know. I said I had fun last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, watching Zack Sabre Jr. It's not everyone's cup of tea, but I enjoyed, you know, all the transitions and the counters. Well, Gallagher wrestled a similar style here, but he was a lot more fun to watch. I enjoyed this a lot more than I did the Zack Sabre match. And I liked watching Sabre, but I like Gallagher even more. Gallagher may be my new favorite. Not to win the whole tournament, but just my favorite to watch. He came out to March of the Toreadors, which is my new favorite theme song in WWE. So forget Bobby Roode for a second. I was talking about the Glorious Bomb and everything before. Fuck that. Forget Bobby Roode, okay? Whereas I accidentally typed it into my iPhone when I uploaded the song. And I think I'm going to leave it that way. Booby Roode. Okay, forget Booby Roode. This is the best song. And I have to thank him because I can't tell you how long I've been wondering what the name of that damn song was. Like, from the first time I heard it, the first time I ever heard March of the Toreadors, it was in a Bounty paper towel commercial many, many, many years ago. And classical songs, like orchestra songs, are the hardest because there's no lyrics. You can't just type in part of the lyrics, you know, and it comes right up. You've got a symphony orchestra. I mean, what the hell are you supposed to do? You can't go on Google and go, you can't do that. That don't work. And if you try to do that in person, the person's going to think you're nuts. And Shazam didn't work either. But as soon as I heard it, all I did was I went online, I typed in Jack Gallagher theme, and there it was. So thank you. Apparently he uses a more rock version of the song on the indies, which also sounds pretty cool. Crowd popped huge every time Gallagher would reverse out of a hold. Fabian Aichner, he deserves a lot of credit here too. He impressed the hell out of me here. They only listed him at 203. 205 is the cutoff in terms of weight. But, you know, when he walked out and he's in there with Jack Gallagher, who's a small guy, very lean. I mean, Aichner looked like a giant in there with Gallagher. He did not look like a cruiserweight, which is probably, I would think that's a big advantage for him, even though he is a cruiserweight. He doesn't necessarily look like one when you first see him. And he may not look like one, but I can tell you this, he moves like one. He did a double jump moonsault at one point. He jumped from one rope to the other rope and then nailed a moonsault, a perfect moonsault. Very impressive stuff. Gallagher beat him, though, with a drop kick to the face, which Mick Foley on Twitter said might be the best corner drop kick he's ever seen. It was very impressive. He beat him with a drop kick. Daniel Bryan nearly lost all control over his bodily functions when he saw this. It was a wicked dropkick, I will give him that. So Gallagher advances, and rightfully so. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa meet face-to-face here backstage before their match. And they make it very clear that they are setting aside their friendship They are setting aside their tag team in favor of winning this tournament. Again, it's like what I said earlier when I was talking about Cena and Styles, right? One-on-one, let's see who the better man is. And these two, of course, they're their partners on NXT, so they played that up very big in this match on commentary. Crowd chanted Johnny Wrestling at Gargano. They chanted Psycho Killer at Ciampa, although Mauro Ranallo at one point referred to him as the Sicilian Psychopath, which I think I like better. This was a fantastic match. The best of all the first-round matches. The wrestling was great. The announcing was great. The story they were telling was great. Ciampa caught Gargano with a back elbow early in the match that sent about a gallon of spit flying out of his mouth. He also hit the white noise on Gargano on the apron, which looked bad. Bad in a, oh shit, he's dead kind of way. But he rolled him into the ring, only got a near fall out of it. That's when he pulled down the knee pad. He was going to go for the finish on Gargano, but he had second thoughts. And he pulled the knee pad back up, and he paid a price for it. Gargano super kicked him right in the face. But Ciampa came right back with a vicious clothesline, gave him a power bomb into a lung blower, still only got a two count. Crowd was going crazy. Gargano's selling here was just masterful. Maybe it just stands out more because we don't see people sell like this very much on WWE television. You know, Shawn Michaels was as good as anyone, but really we don't see too many people selling anymore. So he's on his knees, and Ciampa chops him in the face, which Daniel Bryan could not believe.
Chop to the face! He just chopped him in the face!
Reminded me of that scene from The Hangover, where the guy gets the tasered. He gets, like, the taser thing right in the face, and he goes, in the face! That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that. Gargano took him over, though, with a backslide. Ciampa rolled through, went for an armbar. We've seen him use that before on NXT, but Gargano turned that into a crucifix pin to steal the win. This was great stuff. Ciampa would not shake Gargano's hand after the match. He teased walking out, but then he thought better of it. He came back. Gargano was sitting on the mat at this point, so he sat down Indian style right next to him, and the two of them hugged. Probably, not even probably, this was the best episode yet of the Cruiserweight Classic, and this Wednesday, they kick off the 16-man bracket with Tajiri against Grand Metalik. I gotta make sure I say that name right. I said Grand Metalik before. It's Grand Metalik. And Cedric Alexander in the main event against Kota Ibushi. So, with that out of the way, it is now time. I can't even do it. I can't do a Howard Finkel impression. I could try. It's not as good as my Vince Russo or my Willow, so I won't bother. But it is PayPal Rumble 3 time. This is where we find out who the two winners are that are going to be getting sound-off shirts mailed to them from our Pro Wrestling Tee store. We do have over 24 shirts, by the way. If you would like to buy one and show your support for the podcast, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. We've got, by my count, 26 designs up in the store. So you're all but guaranteed to find at least one that you like. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. Get yourself a shout-out and a nickname if you make a donation of $10 or more. As these people have the names that I'm going to be reading off here. So here we go. This is roll call time for PayPal Rumble 3.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Yvonne Bruiser Balak, Ready to Rumble Robert Castaneda, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Deathblow David Floyd, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Hot Stuff Hector Pena, True Grit Tim Goggin, The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, who is celebrating a birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday, Miguel. Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson, Brian Hitman Hurst, Jet Setter John Peterson, The Master of Disaster Ellie Day, Masked Mayhem Javier Mitchell, First Class LT Gilberry, The Marietta Mauler Alexandru Mata, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, Sweet Ride, Raymond Walters, High Society, Thurman Taylor IV, Your Girlfriend's Crush, Gary Smith, Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa, Judge and Jury, Justin Girardi, Destruction, Jamie Dorsch, Killshot Keith Hart, the Plymouth Party Animal Ben Chesters, the Winsford Warrior Jack Hayward, Light 'Em Up Lamont Ambler, Michael Deathrow Dunn, John Pipelayer Pog, Just Try Me Travis McCoy, Demonic Devin Laney, Kind of a Big Deal Corey Blake, the Deacon of Disaster Omar Ali, the UK Commandos Brian and Emily McCart, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Tom Bodybag Hemstock, Mentally Unstable Matt Cotter, High Roller Jeff Chance, the Glendale Golden Boy Zach Thompson, belated birthday shout out to Anthony Viscusi, by the way, the California Kid Gabriel Solis, Ludacris Lee Swayze, Tito the Kid Myrie, Edmonton Elite Igor Nicotine, the Duet Dragon Joseph Howard, the Quintessential Tough Guy Quinn Fox, the Goshen Ghost Nathaniel Martin, the Stumptown Slasher Chris Duncan, the Tasmanian Devil Ryan Lang, the Miami Madman Andrew Bridges, Aim for the Head Andrew Jorlog, Lady Lara Von Den, Max the Axe Bellotto, the Cicero Psychopath Santo Santana, the one and only Ocampo, Pat the Italian Enforcer Geluso, and Brick Blaster Bill Pivots, who has his own podcast, Piv's NXT Point of View, which is available on iTunes, Podbean, and YouTube. Whew! That's a big roll call, one of the biggest yet. So, with that out of the way, we can now pick our first winner, and as I always mention here, in the interest of full disclosure, the way I do this, I have all the names in a list, and I use the website random.org. There is a list. If you go down, there's actually a list randomizer. It's very simple. All I do is I pop all the names into the box. I click a button that says randomize, and it will then give me a numbered list with all of the participants, with all the names. And so, as far as what number we're going to pick, let's see. We'll pick a number at random here. We have, I think we easily have over 50 names here. So why don't we go ahead and we will pick the number 28. How about that? We'll say number 28. Whoever comes up when I randomize the list at number 28, you are going to get yourself a Sound Off shirt on me, courtesy of the Sound Off. So here we go. We're going to pick winner number one here. Get a little drum roll going. The first winner of the Sound Off shirt is Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa. You are the first winner of the Sound Off shirt. You came in number 28. So, Alan Ragasa, when you hear this, send me your information. I need to know where I am sending the shirt. Tell me which shirt you want. Tell me the size. And if you want soft cotton or not, and we'll get that out to you ASAP. Just be aware, by the way, especially if you're an international listener, it does sometimes take a few weeks to get the shirt, depending on where you are. So if you don't get it right away, don't be alarmed. There were a couple of people last time who were wondering where it was. I think they may have been out of the country. I'm not sure. But you will get your shirt, I promise you. So, Alan, get me your information. And right now we're going to pick our second and final winner. So here we go. We're going to hit the randomize button. And whoever comes in number 28 will get the second Sound Off shirt as part of PayPal Rumble 3. Here we go. And the winner is Michael Deathrow Dunn. You are the winner of the second Sound Off shirt. You came in number 28. So, Michael Deathrow Dunn, I need your address. I need which shirt you want, what size, soft cotton or not, and I will get that out to you ASAP. So, I want to thank both of our winners. Again, Alan Ragasa and Michael Dunn, thank you very much. And to everybody else who participated and made a donation, I appreciate your support more than I can put into words. The response has been great with these PayPal Rumbles. We're going to do more of them. You never know when. You never know when. Hey, there may be another one in 2 weeks. There may not be one for 2 months. You don't know. But do keep making donations if you are able to do so and share your support for the podcast. Again, thesolemonster.com. You can always get yourself a shout-out here on the show, or even a shout-out for someone else, $10 or more. So thank you very much to everybody who participated. Let's get to your mailbag questions, because I like to keep this show interactive. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. I want to first say thank you for all the feedback on the Vince Russo, David Arquette stuff that I talked about last week. I spent about 15 minutes on that mailbag question. The interview he did, by the way, Russo, was with the Gerwick Report podcast. I had not seen it before I got those emails from people asking me about Russo and what he said. And then later on, I saw the clip up on TV Tracks. So hat tip to the Gerwick guys for the interview clip. I just wanted to mention that. Also, Spencer wrote in. He says, I'm going on an old school spree and listening to Sound Off episode 94. And man, you called The Miz and Maurice being a money combo. When was that? Like 6 years ago, probably? Do I win a prize? Now, Miz and Maurice are money together. I mean, as an act, they're a mid-card act at best right now. That's where they're slotted. But no, they are a money couple. And I'm very happy to have been right about that. Remember, that goes back to the fuck me eyes. I've talked about this before. This was back when Miz was the U.S. champion and him and Maurice were not an item. I don't believe they were an item at the time. But Maurice was like leaving and Miz was coming out and they had a promo and he was talking to her in French. And they showed her eyes, and you can find the segment on YouTube. You tell me I'm lying. I'm not lying. And from that, they are a happy couple. See, all's well that ends well. Yaya from Harlem, New York. I was just watching ECW One Night Stand 05, and there was a part where Paul Heyman was ripping into the Raw and SmackDown invaders. And when he got to JBL, he made a comment about the only reason JBL being WWE champion for a year, or the only reason he was champion for a year, was because Triple H did not want to work Tuesdays. Do you know anything about this? And if so, can you explain? It was just a joke. You know, Triple H, he wasn't working SmackDown at the time. I don't think he was working SmackDown at the time. And the implication was that if he did work the SmackDown tapings on Tuesdays, he would have been the champion and, you know, he would have buried everybody else. And Heyman was absolutely right, too. You know, if Triple H was on SmackDown back then, there is not a snowball's chance in hell that JBL would have been WWE champion and gotten the opportunity that he got. It's one of the reasons that Edge wanted to go to SmackDown so badly in, I guess it would have been 2006, 2007, I guess it was. He wanted to get away from Raw. He wanted to get as far away from Raw as possible because he knew, at least on SmackDown, he would have a shot at carrying the show if he was on that other brand. And it was the best thing that could have happened to him. Josh from Southern Maryland. WWE seems to have an interest in reviving the King of the Ring as they filed some trademark applications recently for it. How do you think this should be handled with the brand split now active? Should it be a network special or an actual pay-per-view again? Should it be tied to a single brand or both brands? And who would currently benefit most from winning the tournament? Well, I mean, they're all network specials now. I think we need to kind of get ourselves out of the pay-per-view mode here. I still do the same thing. I make that mistake all the time. I still call them pay-per-views. But they're all network specials now. Dolph Ziggler and Finn Balor would not be in the two title matches at SummerSlam if we were still talking about traditional pay-per-view. There's no chance. There's zero chance of that happening. I like the idea of it being tied to both brands, and you pick one king for the entire company. And you know what? Maybe even open it up to one or two NXT people, even if they have to qualify for the spots. I think Bobby Roode, especially with that song, I think Bobby Roode would actually make a great king. And it would be a great way to introduce him to the main roster. But you know, looking at the two rosters right now, Raw and SmackDown, I like the sound, believe it or not, and people are going to probably disagree with me, but I like the sound of King Corbin. I think Baron Corbin, who's not really doing anything right now, unless they add him to that Intercontinental title match the pay-per-view. Unless they add him to that match at SummerSlam with Miz and Apollo, he doesn't really have anything going on right now. So I could see him benefiting from something like that. You know, he can make him even cockier than he already is. He already has the Andre Memorial Trophy that he won in the Battle Royal. He could add the King of the Ring to that list. If it was a Raw guy, the name that makes the most sense to me would be Cesaro. if they wanted a babyface to win, it could be him. Any of those three guys, I think, that I just mentioned, they can win, but it's all in the follow-up. You know, you can have, it doesn't matter who wins. It's all in the follow-up. And the last couple of times they've done King of the Ring, it was a joke. Sheamus was actually worse off for having won King of the Ring and wearing those stupid antlers. Wade Barrett, he was worse off for having won King of the Ring. I know he used the whole King Barrett gimmick for a while, but he was worse off after having won King of the Ring. So much so that the two of them openly joked about it on that Table for Three episode that they appeared on. So they need to take this shit seriously or don't bother bringing it back at all. Damien, I was listening to the Ringer Wrestling Podcast and an interesting topic came up that I wanted your opinion on. With all the chances Randy Orton has been given and as talented as he is, do you think he fulfilled his whole potential? Like Edge made the most of the chances that he was given, did Orton reach heights that match his opportunities and his talent? No. No, I don't think he did. Randy Orton is one of the most talented guys that I think they've ever had. Maybe not the best promo, but I think he's one of the most talented guys that have ever worked for the company. And, you know, I guess you could say due to a combination of injuries, and he's had a bunch of injuries, okay? Combination of injuries and his own fuck-ups over the years, I don't think he ever reached his full potential. A guy like Randy Orton, he should have been the number one guy. The Randy Orton that we got coming out of that legacy storyline, okay, for that brief period in 2010 when the crowds were going nuts for this guy, absolutely nuts, that was the Randy Orton that should have been their A number one guy. He had that kind of potential. And the RKO was over like Rover. I mean, my God. And for many different reasons, he never got there. Or he would kind of get there, but it would last maybe a few weeks. I mean, they even de-emphasized him for a while, for like a good year or two. He was out of the world title picture. He wasn't at the same level for a while that he had been. And really, I mean, can you blame them? I mean, can you blame WWE? I don't think you can blame them. I don't think, you know, it's like, don't you think they would have loved for Randy Orton to be that guy? They probably figured he would be, right? And then John Cena got hot, and Orton got himself into trouble a whole bunch of times. And it's hard to fault the company for anything. I really don't fault them at all. I don't blame WWE for it. It just never happened. But, I mean, Orton still had a hell of a career, right? He's won, what, 10 world titles? He's still a featured performer. He's in arguably the real main event of SummerSlam coming up. So it's not like he's had a bad career. It's not like he's not going into the Hall of Fame one day. I just don't think Randy Orton has ever reached his full potential. Michael from London, England. Do you think WWE will do another Iron Man match at WrestleMania within a few years? I sure hope not. I hope not. I would not do one at WrestleMania. Not a 60-minute one. I guess 30 minutes is doable. I think Iron Man, I don't think 30 minutes. I think the full hour, which is what I assume you're talking about. I would do it on any other show, but not WrestleMania. I mean, the way they try to fit everybody on that show, I know it's 4 hours or 5 hours now, whatever the hell it is, but the way they try to fit everybody on that show, do you really think they're going to devote an entire hour plus? Because remember, you've got video packages, you've got the big elaborate entrances and the pyro, so before the bell even rings, that's 15 minutes right there. So you're talking an hour and 15, hour and 20. I don't see it. And, you know, it's finally as people look back on that Bret Hart Shawn Michaels match at WrestleMania 12, I mean, yeah, it was a good match. And this is nothing new, I've made this comment before. I think it's overrated. I think it's an overrated match. Look at the crowd for most of that match. They were sitting on their hands. And I'm not saying that to illustrate my point that it was overrated. I'm using that as a point that I'm not sure doing an Iron Man match at WrestleMania with that big crowd and having the crowd sit on their hands for the first 30 or 40 minutes is such a good idea. It always happens in these Iron Man matches. Very few, if any, Iron Man matches has the crowd been up for most of it. Actually, the one, you know what? The one Iron Man match, and I admit I have not gone back and watched them all recently. I could be forgetting one or two. But one of my favorite, if not my favorite Iron Man match of all the ones they've done, the 60-minute ones, was The Rock and Triple H at Judgment Day in 2000. And that one, I remember the crowd being up for a good part of it. That was one of the things I loved about the match. They held the crowd. You know, they were into it. There was a lot of excitement. The finish was fucking awesome, even though it was kind of a fuck finish. The Undertaker coming out on the motorcycle, 30 seconds ticking down. Like, it was really exciting stuff. But that's the only one I could think back on and really remember the crowd being that up for a good portion of it. Most of the time, the crowd dies. And they die because they know there's no reason to get excited until the last 10 or 15 minutes. They know the match is not going to end. Now, if you had a match go an hour without telling people in advance that it was going to go the hour, you could probably build some real drama there. But I still don't see a match ever going that long again at a WrestleMania. Garth from Arizona. Why doesn't WWE have a name for this new era? It's annoying having them say new era over and over again and not even have a name for it. What are your thoughts on this, and what would you name this supposed new era? You know, I consider this the network era. I mean, maybe that's not the best name for it, but that's kind of what I see it as. I really don't give a shit what they call it, so long as they make it interesting. Jay from Atlanta. I was at Raw this past Monday, and with Sasha Banks kicking off the show, it got me thinking. Maybe not at SummerSlam because it's already a stacked card, but could you see Sasha and whoever her future challengers are possibly main eventing one of the upcoming Raw-only pay-per-views later this year or next year? Absolutely. I don't think it's a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when. And which show. You know, to me, Sasha and Charlotte, especially after that match they had on Raw, and I'm sure they're going to have a kick-ass match at SummerSlam, Sasha and Charlotte could easily headline one of the B-shows with a stipulation. You know, for example, we've never seen a women's ladder match in WWE before. I've seen one in TNA, pretty damn good one too, with Taryn Terrell and I think Gail Kim. I've never seen one in WWE. And I got a question once before asking me, hey, what would you think about a Money in the Bank match with the women? And I said that would be a terrible idea. Because can you imagine these women who have never been in a ladder match before, 5, 6, 8 women, all trying to climb ladders and grab this friggin' briefcase? It would be a disaster. They would kill themselves. Now, in a one-on-one match, I'd be okay with that. I'd still worry, but at least you don't have 5 or 6 women climbing all at once, grabbing for this thing. So I think the idea of doing a Sasha-Charlotte singles ladder match for the women's title, could that headline one of those B-shows? Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course they can. Look, Sasha and Bayley was the first women's match to ever headline a takeover show, and I think at some point, those two are going to headline a pay-per-view. Absolutely. Absolutely it's going to happen. Maybe not this year, but I would be shocked if it doesn't happen sometime in 2017. Brian from Belfast. Recently on MLW Radio, former WWE writer Court Bauer was speaking with regards to Finn Balor and Vince McMahon's love of the Irish fighter, with this seemingly in Finn's favor on the main roster. Court referred to Vince's love of Fit Finlay, and that in 2008 he was being considered for a title run. Have you previously heard this rumor? What are your thoughts on Finlay getting a run, and how would you have booked it? I never heard that before. I mean, that's the first I'm hearing of it, but, you know, Court Bauer, you know, he wrote for WWE. I didn't, so I guess he would know. I mean, there's so many ideas that get considered that we never hear about. They never even leave the writer's room. I can't see Finlay as a world champion. I just can't. I would not have done that. But you know what? Then again, if you've got the right story, anything's possible. You know, I wanted Jerry Lawler to go over on Miz in their match because Lawler, you know, the story of Lawler finally winning the WWE title after all these years, as big as he always was in Memphis, he never really had that same, he was never at that same level in WWE. He was a joke for a good part of his early run. He was almost like a comedy character. So to finally see him win the championship, I mean, he would have been 60, even then he was probably 61 or something, but I wanted to see him win. I mean, him and Miz had a couple of actually pretty good matches. I think the ladder match they had was on Raw. I don't remember if it was the ladder match or the match they had at the Elimination Chamber, but I remember hearing that they were seriously considering putting the title on Lawler. Yeah, maybe it was just going to be a one-night thing. I don't think, for example, that would have been in February. Jerry Lawler was not defending the WWE title at WrestleMania, so if anything, it would have been a one-night fluky thing. Miz would have won it back the next night. I would have been perfectly fine with that. I think it would have been great to put the title on Jerry Lawler. And Lawler was over. Like, that feud, that little mini feud, I think that worked pretty well for The Miz, like putting heel heat on him. So, I mean, Miz's title run, you almost look back on it now and you're kind of shocked. Like, this guy had a world title run. This fucking guy headlined WrestleMania. But it's not like the entire title run was a waste. I mean, Miz was actually, he was actually pretty good at the time. And anyway, I would have been in favor of Lawler winning the belt. I mention that only because I'm not against the idea of putting the title like on an old guy or like a washed up guy or something like that if you have the right story. So for example, William Regal is another one. Now, I would not call Regal old and washed up at the time. Regal is similar to Finlay in a lot of ways. He's an old school European, he probably more of a technician than a brawler. I'd say Finlay more of a brawler than anything else, but still very similar style. I would have loved to see William Regal get a run with the World Heavyweight title in, I guess it would have been 2008, like whenever he was the GM. The fans would like misbehave and he would have the lights turned out like they were a bunch of school kids. Regal was on fire. I mean, he was at his peak of heelness during that time. He could have easily, with all the heat he had, he could have easily had a run, even just for a few months. And you had two titles at the time. It always makes it easier to do that sort of thing when you got two belts instead of one. You can't tell me that he wouldn't have had a shot to really get over as a great heel champion. But he messed that one up himself. I think even he would admit that. Finlay, I don't know. I think you could probably do the story of the old vet who everybody thinks is washed up and past his prime, and this is his one last shot at glory. You make him an underdog in the story and try to get people behind him. I think that would kind of be the gist of the story. I don't really remember who had the world title at the time and who was, I don't remember what was going on SmackDown. I think Finlay was on SmackDown, so I can't put names to this. I just don't remember who was doing what at the time, but that's the gist of the story that I would tell with him if I had to book him as champion. Davis from Tempe, Arizona. Why wasn't Triple H versus Stone Cold Steve Austin the main event of WrestleMania 17? I always felt that with that year-long build with the Who Ran Over Austin angle, Triple H could have won the title in his match with Kurt Angle, while Austin wins the Royal Rumble match, and then Austin still wins the title at WrestleMania, and we don't have to go through that atrocious heel turn. What are your thoughts? Yeah, I got your question, and it was interesting. I wanted to throw it in here because I guess I just never really thought of it, but with that long storyline they did, it kind of would have made more sense to pay it off at WrestleMania, right? I mean, here's the deal. If they did not want to turn Steve Austin, which they clearly knew a few months in advance they were going to do, if they didn't want to turn Austin, then you don't do the match with him and Triple H at Survivor Series. That was the pay-per-view where he ended up dropping him in a car upside down. Like, they had their first match since Austin came back from neck surgery was at Survivor Series. So instead, don't do that match. You have Triple H win the championship first, have Austin win the Rumble, just like he did, and then in Texas, in front of 68,000 people, you have Austin get his revenge on the heel and win the championship. But if you do that and you still turn him heel, by doing that, you're turning Triple H babyface, which he clearly did not want to do. Triple H could have easily turned babyface the next night. Remember, he stormed out there. Austin and Rock were in a cage match. Rock was getting his ass kicked. Triple H came out with a sledgehammer. People were cheering him, and they wanted to cheer Triple H. And then he turned and he hit Rock in the face with the sledgehammer, and he made it very clear he wasn't going babyface because he didn't want to go babyface. Believe me, if Triple H wanted to go babyface, then he would have gone. He would have gone babyface. He could have been the one to feud with Austin after WrestleMania, which would have made sense because Rock was leaving to go film a movie. So they were going to be shorthanded by one babyface. Because think about it, like, you had two hot top baby faces, Austin and Rock. Austin turned and Rock left. So instead, you were left with nobody. You had Undertaker and Kane. That was it. It would have made a hell of a lot more sense for Triple H to turn. But obviously, he didn't want to. He wanted, look, and this is my opinion, he wanted to get the rub from teaming with Austin. They would go out there, and there were plenty of weeks, even though Triple H was the Intercontinental Champion and Austin was the WWF Champion, there were plenty of weeks where Triple H came out there, he would command the promo, he was trying to establish and assert himself as the top guy. I'm on Austin's level, I'm on the same plateau with Steve Austin, which he never was, no matter how hard he tried. I love Triple H back 2000, 2001, okay, that's my favorite version of Triple H, but he was no Steve Austin. And he probably was smart enough to realize that, you know, shit, if I turn babyface, which is a kiss of death for some people, and I feud with Austin coming out of WrestleMania, I ain't beating him for the title. Austin's not dropping the championship a month or two later. So there's no future in this for me, right? I'm going to lose. We're going to have a couple pay-per-view matches, and maybe there's a fuck finish, or maybe he just flat out beats me, but I'm probably not winning this title. And after 2 or 3 months, Austin's on to the next guy, and what the hell am I left with? Right? I mean, if I'm Triple H, that's what's going through my head. Hell of a lot better for him to just stay heel and be the cool heel, teaming up with Austin, beating people up every week. So, that's my opinion, my thought on why that went down the way it did. Because it just didn't otherwise make any sense with Rock leaving. You have this void. Somebody has to fill that void, and it's like they didn't have anybody. You know, they did for a month or two with Undertaker and Kane. They were able to kind of fill that void. And then they went to Jericho and Benoit. And Jericho and Benoit were probably two of the best they had on the roster at the time. But, you know, they were hardly being positioned before that as top guys. So, clearly they wanted to do this heel turn. Austin, he was the one who pitched it. He clearly wanted to do this heel turn. He was all in. That's number one. Number two, you know, part of it may have felt like, we're bringing WrestleMania to this large stadium, right? This is the first WrestleMania in a big dome since probably, I guess, the Hoosier Dome, right? 92. What's the biggest possible match that we could book? Well, it doesn't get any bigger than Austin against Rock, does it? So maybe, again, as far as why things went down the way they did, and why they didn't go with Austin and Triple H at WrestleMania, to go back to your original question, maybe that played a role. Maybe that factored into it. Austin Rock really was the biggest match they could do. Triple H, you know, was just beneath them. But I do think the heel turn is probably the biggest reason why things went down the way they did. Because if Austin wanted to turn heel, you know, that was really the only way for it to happen. Joey from Canada, buy or sell? The women's title match between Trish and Mickey from WrestleMania 22, or the triple threat for the women's title between Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky from WrestleMania 32. I'm going to buy on Trish and Mickey from WrestleMania 22. I'm going to sell on the triple threat from Mania this year. The triple threat from Mania this year was good. I think they could do much better. That Trish and Mickey match, to me, I still look back on that, and it's hard to top that. I mean, they went out there. I think part of it was the story. It was very nice to have all three horsewomen, whatever, right there in this match together. The only one missing was Bayley. They introduced the women's title. Thank Christ they brought the women's title back. They got rid of the butterfly. All that was great. And they had a good match. Sasha almost killed herself. Thankfully, she didn't. But they had a good match. But the Trish and Mickey storyline was so fucking great. It's still, to this day, if it's not the best, it's one of the best storylines with the women they've ever done. I guess technically, if you want to count, you know, what they did with Elizabeth and the Mega Powers, that would still be number one. But the Trish and Mickey stuff was great. Mickey James was just on point that whole time. I love that whole stalker Mickey thing. It's a shame they got away from it after that, because I think that was Mickey James at her best. I don't think she was ever really quite, like, character-wise, she was never really quite as good once they got away from the whole crazy Mickey thing. and the segments they did on TV, and she was just really creepy and really, I mean, boy, she got that character down pat. And then they had a good match, and of course everybody remembers the moment with the crotch grab, and it was what it was. It was certainly a memorable moment. They botched the finish. That kind of brought it down a notch. She kind of fucked up the Stratisfaction off the ropes, but I look back on that match and I say it's going to be hard to top that. You know what I mean? Like that was the first time going into a WrestleMania I can honestly say I was really, one of the matches I was looking forward to most was a women's match. And I look back on that WrestleMania and that to me is one of the highlights. So, buy on that, sell on the triple threat. And generally speaking, anybody who knows me, I tend to like singles feuds better than the triple threat stuff. I just think it waters it down. Trish and Mickey, one-on-one, they have their story. It's hard to top that. And finally here, John from California. I was on the TV Tracks channel the other day, and by the way, shout out to TV Tracks. He always gives this show a lot of love, and you all should check out his channel. I was listening to one of your history segments, and you mentioned your favorite SummerSlam of all time. So I had to ask, putting King of the Ring 1993 on the side, because I know that's your favorite of all time, buy or sell on your favorite pay-per-view between SummerSlam 1991 and Royal Rumble 1992. Boy, you just love doing this, don't you? You love throwing that Royal Rumble in my face with these questions. I'm gonna swerve you a little bit. I'm going to buy on SummerSlam 91, and I'm going to sell on the Rumble in 92, and here's why. The Rumble in 92 was the best Rumble match of all time. You could disagree if you want to. That's fine. You would be wrong. And I love the Roddy Piper title change on that show. It was memorable. It was a great moment when he put the Mountie to sleep. He's holding up the Intercontinental title, his first title that he ever won in WWE. It was great. The rest of the pay-per-view, I barely even remember any of it, right? It really was just about those two things. SummerSlam 91, they just had that on the network the other day. I missed the opening match. I put it on in the middle of the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match. And it's just one of those things where once I put it on, I just watched it all the way through. And it reminded me of how great a show that was. I love those old MSG shows. You could tell like the Short Aisle Way, which unfortunately does not exist anymore. So I love the look of the show. I love the location of the show being in New York. But the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match, as much as I like that match better at the King of the Ring, they had a classic match, classic finish. Kudos to Perfect for fucking doing it with his back as screwed up as it was. So you had that match, which was great. You had Ted DiBiase and Virgil, which was a match that was years in the making. So as a match, it wasn't it wasn't out of this world or anything like that. But it wasn't about that, right? It was about Virgil was finally, like, he had stuck it to DiBiase at the Rumble that year. He hit him in the face with the $1 million belt. They had a match at WrestleMania that was kind of forgettable. This was the first, not the first time, but it's very rare that DiBiase put that $1 million belt on the line. I know he did at WrestleMania once, I think, against Jake. He didn't really defend it, though. And this was a title defense. He was putting the championship on the line against Virgil. Virgil had been his bodyguard for years. And this was the culmination of that story, with Virgil getting his revenge and winning, the only person to ever win the $1 million belt. Place went nuts. Piper, who had befriended him in storyline and kind of mentored him, he was on commentary for the show. Piper lost his shit. It was just, and of course Bobby Heenan's on commentary talking about how he'll have it, he'll be pawning it at the local pawn shop within minutes. Everything about that was great. So that was the second title change on the show. The other title change was more for historical significance, which was LOD beating the Nasty Boys to win the tag team titles. So I think that made them the first team ever to win the tag belts in the AWA, the NWA, and WWE. And LOD was super over, so of course people loved seeing it. So three big title changes on that show. And then you had the Big Boss Man and the Mountie, which is a guilty pleasure of mine. I liked their feud. I loved the jailhouse stuff they did on this show. Boss Man won. They carried Mountie into the paddy wagon. They had a camera waiting at the police precinct when he showed up to take his picture, to take his fingerprint. They put him in a holding cell. All the skits they did, especially when they were taking his fingerprints, and you know, you have the cop saying, "Give me your finger." He goes, "You want the finger?" And he just fucking flips the bird. There it is. WWE pay-per-view in 1991. There's the Mountie flipping the bird. I loved it. It was great. It was great. So I look back at that show and I say, man, there's like three or four matches on this show that I fucking love. Yeah, the main event was fine. It was Hogan and Warrior against Slaughter and his goons. It was whatever. It was what it was. They had the Savage Elizabeth wedding, which was kind of corny, but it did lead to something. They did it. They shot an angle off air after the show at the wedding reception with Jake and the Snake. And hey, that led to the snake bite incident on TV. The whole Jake Roberts, Randy Savage feud, I made a comment earlier about how Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, their Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12, I think is very much overrated. Not a bad match at all, but just overrated. Savage and Jake didn't have any particularly great matches, but I think that whole feud, that whole storyline is so underrated, it's criminal. And it didn't last as long, it didn't get the payoff that it should have gotten at it like a WrestleMania, but it's so underrated. And so that SummerSlam 91 show, for a whole bunch of different reasons, I love that whole show. You know, there may have been a couple of duds on there. I think Valentine and IRS had a match. Actually, they did. But it was just a really, really fun and historically significant show. And it led to some pretty cool stuff. So I got to buy on that, and I got to sell on the Rumble. I don't sell on the Rumble very often, but I have to here. So there you go. That's the mailbag. We'll wrap it up for this week. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. You can take a vote in our Raw poll, and when I remember to get one up for SmackDown, which I did not this week, but at least for Raw, you can be assured there will be a poll that goes up every single week. You can vote in that poll, and we will be back next weekend. We're getting very close to SummerSlam, which means we're getting very close to our meetup here in Brooklyn at the KBH Beer Hall. You can find the event invite on our Facebook fan page. I'll tweet a link out every now and then. Please RSVP and sign up if you think you might be able to make it. It's not a requirement. You can pretty much just show up at any point. We're going to be starting at around 2 o'clock. It's going to go until about 6, and then people are going to start to make their way over to the arena. So feel free to join us. Bill Apter will be there. He'll be our guest of honor. He'll be signing books and taking pictures, and it's just a very laid-back thing. You know, I just want to meet everybody and talk some wrestling, and it should be a good time. So that's coming up in 2 weeks. Very much looking forward to that. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We got some interviews that are going to be popping up on there in the next couple of weeks as well. And I'm out of here. I will see you back here next weekend for a brand new episode of the podcast. Until then, be well, stay safe, and take care, everybody.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. That's racist.
Well, no, it's... I'm just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.